Good evening. This is the March meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. And our first order of business will be approval of the minutes from our last meeting, which was January 8th. Everybody has received a copy of these minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, then the minutes can stand as approved as mailed out. Next item is public comment. Anybody wishing to make a comment on an issue that is not on the agenda may come forward now, and they have may make a three-minute comment. Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Is this mic on?
Yeah.
My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I have good news today from the Center for Food Safety in Washington, D.C. In a decision broadly affecting field trials of genetically engineered crops, a federal district judge ruled yesterday that the U.S. Department of Agriculture must halt approval of all new field trials until more rigorous environmental reviews are conducted. Citing potential threats to the environment, Judge Harold Kennedy found in favor of the Center for Food Safety that USDA's past approvals of field trials of herbicide-tolerant genetically engineered bent grass were illegal. Quote, this is a significant victory. The decision requires far more thorough oversight of the environmental impact of these crops, stated Joseph Mendelson, legal director of the Center for Food Safety. The court was clearly concerned that the agency has put our nation's environment at risk by exempting many of these field trials from environmental review. That's why the judge made the decision broadly apply to all future field trials of genetically engineered crops. The federal lawsuit was filed by the Center for Food Safety, Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, and other individuals and organizations in 2003. At issue in the lawsuit are novel varieties of creeping bentgrass and Kentucky bluegrass manufactured by Scotts and Monsanto that have been genetically engineered to resist Roundup, Monsanto's popular herbicide. Currently, use of the Roundup weed killer is limited to spot spraying of weeds in that the herbicide kills any grass with which it comes in contact. The new engineered grass has been altered to be resistant to the weed killer so that users will be able to spray entire lawns, fields, and golf courses with large amounts of the chemical without fear of hurting the grass. Large-scale planting of the biotech grass would therefore significantly increase the amounts of herbicide used in home lawns, sports fields, schools, and golf courses around the country. In seminal studies concerning environmental contamination from genetically engineered creeping bent grass, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency found multiple instances of the pollen from engineered bent grass traveling several miles and transferring its traits to native grasses. Last year, EPA researchers found that the engineered grasses had escaped from field trials to contaminate a national grassland. Quote, these field trials threaten our public land, our communities, and our health, said Leslie Adams, outreach coordinator for plaintiff Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. We will monitor the USDA very closely to make sure they don't allow any more of these tests until they're rigorously assessed their environmental impact. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Just a moment. I think one of the commissioners has a question of you, Mr. Arnold. Would you like to come back to the podium?
Jesse, did they say anything about food trials, or are they just worried about grass at this point?
This applies to all field trials.
Thank you for the good news.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes. Good evening. I am, even though it doesn't feel like evening and happy daylight savings time, I am Eric Greening. And one thing I would hope you would put on a near future agenda, and I'm hoping someone will follow up at the appropriate time in the meeting, would be an update on the status of valley fever in this county. It seems to be on the increase, and since we're entering into a season where more and more soil-disturbing activities take place, and it is in the soil, I think it would be informative both for you and for your audience out there to learn about exposure pathways and patterns in its incidence in this county. I would further suggest that if the information warrants that it be passed on to the Board of Supervisors with instructions to involve the Planning Department and other land use type agencies, the Agricultural Commissioner's Office. I can't help but wonder if the rising incidence is connected with such things as the proliferation of ag clusters and other residential areas adjacent to production agriculture, for example. But obviously learning something about the patterns of incidence of the disease and where people are thought to have picked it up may help shed some light on what sorts of issues and what sorts of responses the county ought to take. I would also have to say that even though you see me disappear to another meeting, I am vitally, vitally concerned with the insurance issues, and I hope you continue to stand firm in supporting Sheila Kuhl's bill and are not dissuaded or deviated by this strange bill of goods the governor seems to want to sell, which seems like a way to make sure that the most possible people have the least effective possible coverage while most of the funding goes to the insurance companies rather than direct provisions of service. So anyway, stay strong on that, and I look forward to the information that you're going to learn tonight.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Greening. Ms. Johnson?
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Johnson. I live in San Luis Obispo. This past January, Dr. Thomas stated that the following Brown Act violations were not true and that the record shows that all the documents being questioned are now present in the Health Department records. Dr. Thomas could not have stated this before at least November 22, 2005, because the agendas and minutes of 7 months of task force meetings did not exist in a form that was available for public viewing. In early November, one task force member made me copies of all the agendas he had, including his notes on items. This was the first time I saw a meeting agenda, though I had attended since August. Even though I was requesting agendas and minutes for all earlier GMO task force meetings, at least by early September, agendas and minutes were not online or available in the office until late November. Both Chairwoman Enns and Commissioner Horn expressed anger towards me for repeatedly requesting public documents. They were posted and the meeting's minutes were written retroactively in late November 2005. Stating otherwise for the record does not make it true. However, not providing agendas is illegal and could be prosecuted if anyone wanted to. For me, though, the casual disregard of public notice and minutes for a study group on a contentious topic is the greater offense. The lack of conflict of interest disclosures and general absence of standard government ethics is a greater offense. The lack of response to year-long request concerning task force selection, which generated at least three wildly varying stories by Commissioner O'Dell, is a greater offense. In view of this public disgrace, any normal citizen should expect those of you responsible to step down from your posts. It says a great deal about the commission that not only do you remain at your posts for a second year, but that someone is telling you not to worry. The public will carry liability costs, taping, public building employees' salaries, while several of you act as if you have no responsibility to us. And lastly, congratulations to Commissioner O'Dell, who has been elected to serve as an ag advisor alternate to Mrs. Michael Bradhurst. Dr. Bradhurst was a major pro-GMO task force member on the North Coast Advisory Council. Once again, I've provided my list of 16 Brown Act violations for your perusal and to counter Dr. Thomas' erroneous statement in his January comments. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any other public comments? All right, then we'll move forward to our first item on the agenda, which is the health insurance provider participation and access issues. And we have with us tonight Robert O'Keefe, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Coastal Communities Physician Network. And he will be our first speaker. Welcome to the Health Commission.
Thank you, Chair Ennis, and thank you all for having us here, or having us here tonight. As I indicated earlier when I came in, that I certainly wanted to bring reinforcements in case anyone wanted to ask questions that I couldn't answer. I didn't have a formal presentation to make to any of you, but I did want to let you know a little bit about who we are and who we were and where we started, and certainly perhaps address any misconceptions that may have arisen as a result of us coming into town. We are a Knox Keene license holder. We are a full risk-bearing entity. There are very few of us in the state that can do that. What that entails relative to our business and economic models is it allows us to take full risk for not only the professional side of a provider group, but for the institutional side or hospital side as well. That is probably one of the reasons, in addition to relationships we have in several other markets, that Blue Cross elected to contract directly with us. I certainly understand why the local IPA would take issue with that. I sympathize with their position. I think what I'm here to do tonight, and hopefully answering any questions and engaging in a positive dialogue, would be to clearly, I think, understand and define for all of our benefit the difference between a group not wanting competition to come into town, which in many instances is understandable, but the difference between that and representing that being something good for the community is something I think it's very important to note. We've been doing this for 22 years. I report to our founder, who was an emergency room physician, a board-certified emergency room physician who worked in Los Angeles for several years. Our founding group was the Bakersfield Family Medical Center. Our parent company is called the Heritage Provider Network. We have over 300,000 members throughout California and New York. Bakersfield is one of our smaller groups. We have a dominant market position in the Coachella Valley, which is Palm Springs and Palm Desert. We have over 70,000 lives in the High Desert, which is Lancaster and Palmdale, and close to 100,000 lives in the greater Los Angeles area, east into San Bernardino and Riverside counties, and south into the northern portion of Orange counties. We think that the programs that we're going to be introducing to this market, we are very committed to this market. We are committed to introducing senior products to this market. We are committed to bringing physicians into this market. We are working with one of the local hospitals, the tenant hospitals in town, to help recruit physicians into the market. We will bring physicians into the market that are employees of ours. We will commit to putting brick and mortar in place, which would mean not only the operation of an expanded hours clinic, but an urgent care, an infusion and procedures operation, and a wound care clinic as well. We also are committed to bringing 24-hour, 7-day-a-week case management into this community and introducing our programs to the community. And we look forward to having an opportunity to really serve the community. Again, I think the best things for its citizen is not just to have one of us, not just to have an HMO product line, not just to have a PPO product line, but I think if we look at test cases and examples set by other communities across the country, where the community is not served well is by eliminating choice. We think we bring a viable choice to the table, and I welcome any and all questions that any of you may have, not only the commission, but any of the citizens here, relative to what we're doing and talking a little bit about what our plans are.
Okay, well, I'll open that to questions from the commissioners. I know there are some. Where shall we start? Commissioner Guerena, thank you.
Well, hi. I just have a basic question. Are you, is it mainly an employer base that you get your patients? Is it through employers?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, 30% of our encounters are now PPO encounters. So the PPO members come to us in 30% of the occasions that we provide care and service. 70% still come from the HMO product line. We have the largest senior population in Kern County. We do have over 20,000 commercial patients, and yes, the majority of those come to us via employer groups.
And do you know how long a patient stays with your group? What's the turnover rate for your patients?
On the senior side, we're very proud of our retention, and that usually exceeds 7 years for a senior who joins our group. On the commercial side, A lot of times it's based, in if not in most instances, based on the decision of the employer to make a determination whether or not, for example, in Kern County, that Kaiser comes in with a very competitive premium structure and a very rich benefit structure, we may see several changes in the course of 5 years. So the average term for our commercial member would be 2 years or under. And I think you'll find that to be consistent throughout the country.
And so what's the incentive for you then to plan long-term care, health, prevention, you know, disease prevention, if your clientele is only around for 2 years?
Well, that again, that's on the commercial side of the business, our patients that are under 65. We are extremely committed to partnering with a health plan here in San Luis Obispo and Tulare Counties to introduce not one, but hopefully several senior products. We would like to think we would be able to do that as early as January of 2008.
Okay,
and that would be our incentive to increase and develop a senior membership that would be very significant. You're very welcome.
Commissioner Shimosis.
Okay. Thank you for coming. I have a couple of questions, actually. Let me see if I'm clear in understanding exactly what your role is in terms of the payer. You contract with the various entities in terms of providing care for their paying clientele. In other words, you're not the direct insurer per se. You just are the medical just. You are the medic. You represent the medical group of that equation?
Yes, we are the full, absolutely, we are the full risk-bearing medical group,
okay.
Which does indeed, not to belabor that point, it does indeed distinguish us from most other medical groups throughout the state of California.
Understand. Thank you. My question, one of the questions, I'll see how it develops with the rest of the commissioners, is in terms of, would you talk a little bit about the process that you engage in or that you are contracted to engage in terms of providing authorization for, say, specialty services and things of that nature?
Certainly. And I'm going to respond to that by telling you that we're not apologists for being managed care people.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be the choice for everyone. But it will be a viable alternative for everyone across the country. We and if you allow me to just to bore you all for a moment, you know, we were called back to General Motors to talk to their executive staff and their CEO, who was clearly an embattled, great guy and a terrific leader by the name of Rick Wagner. General Motors, in an effort to provide benefits to their retirees, oftentimes in exchange for wage concessions on behalf of the union, General Motors has got themselves into a situation where arguably one of the most successful multinational corporations in history is dangerously flirting with an insolvency profile. They are spending about $1,500 per manufactured unit for each vehicle on healthcare. Their competitors, Nissan, Toyota, et cetera, are spending $200, $300, and $400, thus allowing them to take those extra funds and put them into the development of new product lines and the marketing of new product lines and the promotion of new product lines. They have a retiree in every zip code in the nation. And all of these retirees are self-referring. It is absolutely a model that no longer works. The federal government, CMS, Tommy Thompson is on our board, the former Secretary of Health and Human Services. The federal government has recognized that in order to be able to fund Medicare, we are indeed going to have to manage that care for our seniors, or there will be nothing there to fund any benefit whatsoever. We do require referrals and authorizations. We hope our process is less onerous than what was here before us. I'm very proud to say that the testimonial we've amassed in the 7 months that we've been doing business here is starting to be something that we'd be able to share with all of you. Doctors who are now telling our provider relations department, my goodness, it's just so easy doing business with you. But we can't let an individual self-refer for a PET scan if they have a bunion. And I say that as a hideous example of managed care in terms of what one do. But you have to be able to treat patients if you're an internist. You can't simply triage them. We are very proud of the standard that we hold our internal medicine physicians to relative to providing treatment and not just simply triaging to the specialty that corresponds to the afflicted body part. We definitely have specialty referrals and huge volumes, making sure everybody gets what they need and they get what they need on a timely basis. But yes, there's a referral and authorization process. It starts, to try and answer your question specifically, it starts with primary care. And the primary care physician will designate that referral either a standard referral or a stat referral. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we run into problems in many markets relative to patient perception. As a patient, if I go to my primary care physician and he says, no rush, but you need to see a cardiologist, I want to see the cardiologist tomorrow. The cardiologist, unfortunately, unless it happens to be a community, and ours here and yours here is not one of them, unless there happens to be a surplus of specialty, it is not a realistic expectation for that patient to be able to call a cardiologist the next day on a non-stat basis and get in 2 days. The cardiologist will look at that referral and say, we can see you in 3 weeks, ma'am or sir. So we do have a process. We do review data. We examine data. And we make sure that people get everything they need. And hopefully they get directed to a place where we have not only a good relationship, not only where we have case management intervention to be able to make sure that patient is getting everything they need with someone who is familiar with their cases, but yes, there is an economic imperative, and some of that you'll see here. And it also brings up an interesting point about transition of care cases. If someone had been seeing an oncologist, mm-hmm. we would do everything we could to enter into a letter of agreement with that oncologist, even if they didn't want a contract with us, to continue seeing that patient. If someone had had surgery 3 or 4 or 5 years ago at Stanford, we would want to make sure they were going back to their doctor if there were a recurrence of some kind, either a disease progression or if they had another issue or incident they needed to deal with. But if a patient wants to have surgery that's on a tertiary level in San Luis Obispo County, our contracted facilities are UCLA and Cedars-Sinai. And there is a difference there, and there is a difference in a referral pattern. It also might be a good time to talk a little bit about transition of care. I think we'd like to shift the burden of that, and I'd like to say publicly what I've been saying privately for several months. We're offering doctors raises from whatever they were making in a prior period. If Mrs. Jones is seeing a physician for several years and now wonders why that doctor can no longer see her, I think it's important that Mrs. Jones gets the straight and truthful answer. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're offering doctor, whoever that might be, a raise. If he doesn't want a contract with us because we represent competition, then that's something we have no choice but to accept. But don't tell the patient it's because we're unwilling to pay. Don't tell the patient it's because our processes are onerous when we all know they're actually less onerous than our predecessor, which was a health plan. Did I ramble too much, or did I even come close to answering that question that you asked?
Close, yes, okay. Thank you.
And please redirect me, because I all my people will tell you that I do tend to ramble.
Just another quick issue. In terms of access to care with a very large transition, as I'm sure you're well aware, over 10% of this community was affected by that transition,
yes.
which is a big chunk in any given community. The specific issues that I've heard in terms of complaints are access to care, waiting lists, physicians that are on the list of accepting new patients that are really indeed have closed practices and are not accepting new patients. How are you dealing with that issue?
Well, the best we can. I would say, though, and I totally recognize that, we recognize the seriousness of that problem. Mm-hmm. I would say, in all fairness to us, that that problem didn't start with us taking over this book of business. It's an underserved community. You don't have enough primary care physicians, and we hope we become a solution to that problem. All we can do is do what we can do, and we are offering contracts to every primary care physician. The Slow Select Network, and I think it's a very healthy thing that there will always be a dynamic tension between an organization like ours and an organization like Slow Select. I think it's very good for the community. I think it allows the health plans to leverage both of us against one another, but it allows us to come in and offer additional services and certainly an increased access profile to physicians. Is there a quick fix to say when someone's trying to get to see a primary care physician and they're booking 3 weeks out or 4 weeks out, do we have a miraculous cure for that? I wish we did. Yeah. We do not. Mm-hmm. You know, other than to say we do have an access opening over here. Would this physician be someone you'd be willing to see? You can get in to see them sooner. That is something that our member services department does on a daily basis. But if someone is committed to seeing the physician that they've chosen, and that physician, you know, on a non-stat basis, if it's an establishment visit or a sports physical for one of the kids, that's going to have to be something that they book as soon as they can, and we don't have a magic fix for that.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner Horn?
Yes, can you tell me what your physician retention rate is? How often you have a turnover if physicians become unhappy with what you're providing them? Do you have a record of that?
Yeah, we absolutely do, and okay. And we look at that. I would, at the risk of sounding defensive, not characterize a lot of the physician changes has nothing whatsoever to do with unhappiness. We have a tremendous amount of physicians that are employed by us, Commissioner. They are staff model physicians. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, a physician will graduate from a residency program, become a staff model physician for 3 years, and then want to realize their dream about going into private practice. Technically speaking, that's a turnover, but it is something that we oftentimes will partner with the physicians. I don't know if we have, and I'm more than happy to furnish the commission with that data. I don't have committed to memory when you combine primary care staff model and specialty. I don't know exactly what the turnover rate is on number of years. We have had a radiology relationship in place for 17 years in Bakersfield. We've had several specialists that have been with us for a very long time and primary care doctors for a very long time. But I'd be happy to furnish the commission with specific data relative to turnover.
Thank you.
And break it down for you if we can.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Thank you for coming this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I have two questions. Are you entertaining single patient or single case agreements in this transition phase if you don't have a doctor that's contracted or is not contracted?
Absolutely. And we have on numerous occasions signed letters of agreement where we're paying full bill charges to a physician in order to allow for a continuity of care or a transition of care problem.
Okay.
But I would like to shift that burden back, Commissioner Hetherington, if I may, to the physician. Meaning, if we're offering you a higher rate of reimbursement than you were currently receiving or that you had been receiving in the past to see that patient, why wouldn't you want a contract? We're not asking you for exclusivity. Why would you not want to continue to service the community and see those patients that have established with you and developed that kind of relationship with you?
My second question has to do with your financial pie. Could you break out what your administrative overhead is as opposed to what your patient care dollars are?
I can't because we're not the insurance company. Our administrative overhead, I wouldn't be probably willing to or willing to make anyone privy to our administrative costs being a privately held company, but I would tell you that in terms of the patient care and what the ratios are, those are things that health plans talk about. Not in a full risk environment do we talk about that. But again, let me take that question into consideration and certainly get back to you by tomorrow with something in writing in terms of what our position would be in discussing our administrative costs. You're welcome.
Very appropriate, because you're giving us a model that's a little bit different than the health plan model, but yet I realize that there's administrative costs and there's patient costs, and you should be able to break those out. But I can also understand your constraint of trade.
There may be a proprietary nature to some of those. I would certainly say if our competition in the community was willing to furnish you with the same information, count me in. Okay.
Commissioner Hicks?
I have a couple of questions for you. Usually when you have contracts with physicians, medical groups, you have standard protocols that when a new patient calls, they're supposed to be seen within X amount of days. Do you have that?
We do have those in every one of our contracts, Commissioner Hicks, but unfortunately, in most markets, they're unenforceable.
Okay. And do you follow up on those that are unenforceable?
We do. We will go to the specialists who are having access problems. We have a urology problem in Kern County, for example. We usually get the behavior modified for 2 or 3 months, and then we're right back in there again when the complaints start rolling in. So we do everything we can. Again, we're not unique there, but yes, we do have that. We have contractual stipulations and language as to how quickly a patient needs to be seen.
Okay.
But if there aren't enough physicians and they don't have any room in their schedules, there's not a heck of a lot one can do about it except to continue to bring new doctors in.
Next question is, I'm a little bit curious about your reimbursement structure to the physicians. Are you using a capitated plan, or are you paying?
I'm sorry, pardon me.
Are you using a capitated plan per patient, per member, or per member per patient, or are you using PPO rates?
Over 95% of our, well, not a PPO, you mean, is it capitation or fee for service?
Yes, thank you.
That's quite all right, no. And there is a PPO component to that that I have no problem talking about. 95 to 98% of our relationships in San Luis Obispo County are fee for service.
And of the fee for service, are your rates that you're reimbursing higher than Medicare?
In every, virtually every case, and don't hold me to a contract, in virtually every case, they're higher than Medicare. And in almost every case, they represented 10 to 30% raises from what the physicians were receiving with Blue Cross in the immediate prior period.
Okay.
And the PPO model, some of our rates that we're reimbursing here in San Luis Obispo come closer to PPO reimbursement than they would in any other HMO setting. So no one can tell us that, again, I have no problem with saying we don't want competition and we don't want to contract with you because we're trying to keep competition out. I understand that, but no one could say it's because we're unwilling to reimburse at high rates. And the other thing that was suggested at times, and it's anecdotal, but we've heard it, it's come back to us, that our strategy was to come in and reimburse physicians at one rate for the first year of the contract and then go and take it all away in subsequent periods. We have contractually bound ourselves to make sure that we will never take a physician backward during the entire term of the contract. Most of them are for a minimum of 3 years.
May I ask one more question?
Please.
I've worked in many physician groups where at the end of the year, depending upon how the utilization was done with the patient, there's possibly bonuses that are given back to the physicians. Do you have the same structure in place?
We don't have utilization bonuses in a fee-for-service environment where we're reimbursing this at this high level. We do have those structures in place we do have them, but they're not significant, and I don't want to misrepresent anything here. We certainly have bonuses for access. We have bonuses for patient satisfaction. They're not significant dollars. Where some of the significant dollars come in is in the capitated environment, where a physician is being paid on a per-member, per-month reimbursement basis, and at the end of a particular period, we look at what their referral patterns were, what their overall all utilization patterns were, and bonus them accordingly. It is not something that goes hand-in-hand with fee-for-service reimbursement because the physician is being paid per encounter or per service or procedure, or procedure performed. You're very welcome.
Commissioner Odell.
Now, you got me a little confused. You're not an insurance company.
We are not, sir.
Where do you get your revenue?
From the insurance companies.
And all insurance companies, or do you contract with insurance companies? What is your method?
We do contract with insurance companies. I would not say all insurance companies, but I would comfortably say most.
And you recently contracted with Blue Cross, is that right?
Well, we've been contracted with Blue Cross for almost 20 years.
Oh,
we recently contracted with them, sir, in this market.
In this, yeah, here.
Yes.
In this county. And so you contract with them on what basis? On a per capita basis or a...
We are capitated, yes, and we are full risk. So Blue Cross will give us a per member per month reimbursement,
right.
And we are responsible for all the care that right. particular member utilizes for that period, so including hospital.
What about other insurance companies? Are they per capita too? Or?
We have most of our relationships are identical to that are capitated relationships, full risk relationships. We do have a Blue Shield relationship in Kern County and in Palm Springs, and we have a Health Net shared risk relationship in Kern County for a very small segment of the population. But to be perfectly honest, we do have some shared risk relationships. They don't represent a significant portion of our membership.
So it's basically a per capita that you contract with the various insurance companies.
Per member per month.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
And what about businesses? Do you do that too, or is it just the insurance company?
That's all done through the insurance company.
When a
business or an entity that's doing business wants to bid their health care costs, they might go to Kaiser, Blue Cross, Aetna, and whatever they work out is what they work out, including not only the pricing of that product, but the benefit structure. We then just simply, we download those things into our systems, and then we provide the benefits as prescribed in their policy.
So you're a small Kaiser in a way.
You are. We're a $900 million Kaiser.
Yeah,
that would make us a tiny Kaiser.
It's a similar concept. Exactly.
It's a similar model, except the one thing that we do not do, sir, that Kaiser does in most of their markets is we do not own and operate hospitals.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
And Kaiser is not doing that as much either.
Well, yeah, we wish they weren't doing it at all.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Are there any other questions from commissioners? Commissioner Shimousis.
Sorry. As a follow-up to your response to Commissioner Hetherington, you commented about a question that you would pose to a physician that was being contracted with. Would you say a little bit more about that in terms of have you asked that question of any physician and what their response has been in terms of why they do not contract with you?
We have, and we feel that I won't give too diplomatic an answer, but we'll try and say as general as possible. I think it's due to their allegiance to the existing IPA in town, which is called Slow Select, which by all accounts contains a fine group of physicians delivering high-quality health care, and we have no issue with that. What I do have an issue with is the fact that we would be representing something other than that. I understand why Slow Select would take exception, as I said at the outset, to Blue Cross not coming to them first. It makes perfect sense. I would feel the same way if I were them. But they didn't, and what we're saying to Slow Select physicians is, please, we don't have to have an exclusive relationship. Contract with us. Name your price within reason, and allow these patients to choose. As long as the Slow Select physicians are willing to be honest with their patients and not say, we're not doing this for this, or we're not, as long as they just say, we're not doing this because we simply don't want competition in town, and we've made a decision that this is the best way of dealing with that. I'm okay with that. But I don't know why they wouldn't, and now some of them are. We just recently signed with the urology group. We now have an exclusive relationship with Central Coast Obstetrics and Gynecology. So some of those Blue Shield patients hopefully will be seeing come back to us. I know a lot of that was about obstetrics and gynecology, and some of it was about pediatrics. So we're the people that were steadfast in their refusal 5 months ago are now calling us, so we're hoping it works that way. You're welcome.
Any other questions? I think the only thing that I'd like to ask you to just once more make clear for all of us and for anybody who is watching, the difference between you and what you do now for the Blue Cross HMO and what the Blue Cross HMO was before the changeover.
Okay. Blue Cross actually, in select marketplaces, of which this was one of them, actually owned and operated the IPA. They were called WIPA in this market. They did all the referrals and authorizations. They contracted directly with the physicians and the hospitals. And in essence did, as a health plan, what we do as the employer of physicians and the implementer of programs. We think that health insurance companies do what they do well. We have no desire to compete with them, even though our license would permit us to introduce a private label product. We think what we do better than a health insurance company. There has also been discussions about the fact that that this isn't a local operation. We do have a local office here. Give us a little time, but there will be local doctors here who are employed by us. Again, all good things. But I think we do the physician group piece better than a health plan does, and I think most of the health plans would readily acknowledge that at this time. But hopefully all that will happen, and again we're gathering the testimonial, is the physicians will say, one, we're easier to deal with. You're not getting a number in Indiana. You're not getting a number in Ventura. You're getting people that are here and people that are in Bakersfield, where we process claims directly. We don't farm them out to the Philippines. Okay, we do it all under one roof. Okay. We pass our audits with 98.6 to 100% accuracy, both on timeliness and accuracy of payments. Okay, this is all stuff that's supervised by the Department of Managed Healthcare in Sacramento. So we're very proud. I'm very proud of the people that I work with in terms of what they do every day. I think we do what Blue Cross did here. I think we do it a little better and a little more efficiently.
Yeah, I have one more.
Commissioner O'Dell.
Yes. Are you a stockholder company or a nonprofit? I may have missed that earlier in your presentation.
We are a for-profit organization, Commissioner. I am not a shareholder in the company.
But, But it is a stockholder company?
It's a privately held corporation.
Privately held.
We have one person, the founder of the organization, holds all the shares.
Thank you.
Also, if there are no more questions, I think we can put up on the screen your customer service.
Provider relations
number. Provider relations,
yes.
Phone number. Bob had that, if you'd put that up on the screen. Thank you. We can't see it on our little screen.
And we ask you to put it to the test. If any of you have relatives or coworkers, family members in any way that are having issues with continuity or transition of care issues, we implore you to test it out, because we really do pride ourselves in doing that. And Commissioner O'Dell, I'm thinking that perhaps based on your last question, I ought to approach our founder for some equity. and it, I feel that I should be able to have some now that you're talking about it in those terms.
Don't.
Yeah, I won't. Okay, that's a deal.
Well, thank you very much for being here. If you don't mind waiting a little bit, we are going to now have someone who represents Slow Select.
Sure.
And the only other question I would ask, is there anyone in the audience who has questions for Mr. O'Keefe at this time? Okay.
Well, thank you all very much,
thank you very much
for having us and providing the time. Thank you.
And I now understand that Barbara Cheever, who is the CEO for Slow Select, is here to talk to us about basically the Blue Shield product, which for which they are the provider. Welcome.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for inviting me. I have to apologize because I really didn't know I was coming to this meeting. One of the physicians was actually going to come to attend and talk about Slow Select. So I'd really like to just answer any questions you may have and maybe start by giving you a little bit of an overview of Slow Select as compared to the other organization in town, just so that you can see some of the differences. May help answer some of your questions. Slow Select is a physician organization that is solely owned and operated by the physicians that live here in San Luis Obispo and North County. They've been in business since 1994. They are run locally by a board of directors that, again, are all at the physician level. So they run their organization. Basically, they, too, contract with the health plans to take risk. I think the difference is they only take risk for the services that they provide. So they believe that what they need to do is provide care for the community based on the dollars that are available from the insurance companies. They really don't perceive themselves as being in the insurance business or the at-risk business. They are at risk financially to a limit by saying they do take, financial risk for professional services, but they limit it to the professional services. They do believe that they do control physician services to some extent. The reason they don't take risk for hospital services, and I think at one point in time, if you looked at managed care, most physician entities did take risk for hospital services. And what they found was they're not in the hospital business. They don't negotiate those contracts well. They don't establish what the costs are. So they really weren't any good at it. So they got out of the hospital business, and they really chose to focus at providing care and governing the dollars associated with the health care that they actually are responsible for. The other thing that I think is important to understand is that the physicians of Slow Select are not required to be exclusive. I think the difference is, since many of the physicians are owners of the organization, this is their business. They own it. They own a piece of it. And they feel it's a very important institution to the community. As far as the financial structure, they too have capitated providers and they have fee-for-service providers. I think what they've tried to do in the past few years is really make sure they have enough revenue coming in to pay for patient care. Again, they don't feel they're at risk for patient care. They kind of consider themselves as a pass-through. They're here to provide patient care. The insurance companies are out there writing benefits and selling products, and they're here to deliver that. So I think a lot of times our physician organizations are put in the middle, that they're actually the ones creating shortnesses in reimbursement and things like that. And I think this group looks at it differently. They're not here to set those reimbursement rates. They're here to provide care for the members in the community and deliver the best care they possibly can. So that's really the goal of their organization, is to keep healthcare here and to make sure that patients are getting all the services they need.
Thank you. All right. Questions from commissioners? Dr. Thomas.
Thanks for coming tonight. Maybe if you could step back and answer historically what has, same question as the other gentleman answered, and that is, what has your role historically been, recent history? You want to go back to mid-90s, you can, but for those of us getting the intro course and those listening, what were you providing before and what are you providing now, and what's the beef about?
Well, I think stepping back in time, looking at managed care organizations back in the 80s and early 90s, managed care organizations become very fast growing because physicians and hospitals were basically given proposals by health plans. They were looking for ways to reduce their costs. And what they found was there was a lot of excess. They felt there was a lot of waste in the system. So what they did is go about recruiting physician organizations and hospitals by telling them, this is our budget. And anything we don't spend in the budget goes back into the kitty, and it's yours at the end of the day. And they, I guess in the short way of thinking, that was a quick way to try and find a way to control their budgets. Well, what we found over the years was that the health plans start getting in competition over insurance. And what you soon found in the 90s was that Aetna was trying to outbid Blue Cross, and Blue Cross was trying to outbid Blue Shield. So what was happening, while healthcare costs were rising, the insurance companies were out fighting over premiums, and they were reducing premiums. So pretty soon we found ourselves upside down. We had less money coming in and more money going out. Well, as this was happening, the insurance companies, which a lot of the insurance companies are for-profit organizations, their shareholders were not very happy with this. So what we start seeing in the 90s as well is we start seeing the health plans sub-delegate and pass off a lot of their contractual risk either to the physician groups or the hospital side. They're again eliminating the financial risk to their shareholders and passing that down to their physicians and hospital organizations. So in the 90s, you saw throughout the country, and mostly in California, a lot of those organizations going bankrupt because there just wasn't enough revenue coming in to pay for that service. So I think that was a real good learning experience for a lot of organizations, and that there's very few independent IPAs that are still operating today because of that. And I think for the groups that have survived, what they have learned is to, one, they have to make sure that they're getting adequate revenue to pay for patient care. Because if they're not, their choices are to limit patient care or go bankrupt. Okay? That's really not acceptable to us. So the only way we have to deal with that is we have to go about our business by continuing to provide the best care we can, to provide access to care, and ensure our providers are paid. And if we do that, it's up to the insurance companies to go about setting what the premiums are for that and to go about collecting that so that we can help pay our physicians to provide that care.
Go ahead, Dr. Thomas. You know,
just as a follow-up question, so if I want to talk about what so Slo Select has contracted to do in the recent past, is it limited to HMOs, health maintenance organizations, as opposed to the PPO, the preferred provider organization model?
San Luis IPA has always only represented HMOs. They've never been in the business of contracting for PPOs. That's actually something that's retained by the physicians directly.
Okay, so you have Slow Select IPA receives a capitated amount for the group of patients that you're responsible for providing the physician or professional component means physician component or physician and?
Physician and para-healthcare workers. So not ambulance, not hospital, things that are really associated with physician care.
Okay. And you have had a contract with Blue Shield historically and Blue Cross historically or just Blue Shield historically?
Actually, Blue Shield just became effective with our organization in January. Slow Select has not had a Blue Cross contract, I believe, for, I want to say, over 10 or 11 years.
Okay. So what contracts did you have until recently?
We have Cigna, Aetna, Pacific Care, and Secure Horizons.
Okay. All right. I think that was the background information I was trying to pull out. Thanks.
Well, we thank you for being here.
One last comment.
Yes, please.
As far as physicians, the other thing I'd like to add, I think Slow Select is really proud in the fact that we have really put a lot into recruiting physicians, again, because it's a physician-based organization. And we feel that we're here to support physicians, not only in the financial end, but also working on issues that they have in other areas of healthcare, dealing with insurance companies, you know, the policies and procedures of what they do and how they operate. So we have recently recruited and added 28 new primary care providers in the county. And we feel that's a real success.
Dr. Thomas.
Okay, so go to the bottom line, to the patient. The patient, not the patient yet, the person who's signing up for insurance, their concerns are, is my provider on your panel if I'm going to go with an HMO? And secondly, if I need specialty care, are the specialists that I want to see on your panel? And thirdly, if I need specialty care, am I going to be able to get it, or is the whatever IPA or managing company, are they going to say, no, I can't see a specialist, or no, I can't get this kind of care or other kinds of care? I mean, those seem like the basic the three. Is my personal physician available, or a good doctor that available to see? Are there a good representation of specialists, and is the care that's approved appropriate, or do elements of care that need to be given somehow get pushed? Is there too much pushback? Do the referrals get taken care of in a timely manner? Do you have any comments about any of those issues?
Well, yeah, all of them. Basically, when patients choose who their primary care is, the health plan, actually, we feed all that information to the health plan on a monthly basis. So they get a list of who our providers are, both coming and going, primary care and specialist. Okay. And most of the health plans nowadays post that information on their website. Probably not as frequently as they need to. But they are responsible for sharing that information with their employer groups and with the members. As far as referrals, again, Slow Select is basically physician-driven. A lot of what they have established are basically guidelines for their physicians that, and this is for primary as well as specialty, that if their physicians feel patients need to be referred for certain conditions at certain times, they've pre-established some of that requirements. So those physicians can self-refer those patients, either by filling out a form or submitting it online based on the member's eligibility, and they're just done. They're automatically approved. Outside of that, referrals that come through the system, most of this is nowadays is really regulated by law as well as the claims and referrals. But I think Slow Select exceeds that. They actually have all their referrals are submitted electronically They have three physician reviewers that literally log into the system so that if anything doesn't meet one of the pre-approved criteria, first it goes to an RN nurse reviewer. If they can't determine where that patient needs to go or there's any issues going on, they either call the physician, who's the physician referrer, or they're looking in the system all day long to look at those cases. And we actually have two RNs that locally that support that, as well as our non-clinical staff. So basically, it's physicians who are looking at this stuff on a daily basis to ensure that those patients' needs are taken care of. The physicians will also, those medical directors will also call upon the specialist. If they're not sure what to do with the case or where it needs to go, they'll either call the specialist, they'll call the medical director at the health plans. I mean, they do a lot of case management at the physician level, which I think is quite unique.
Continue on, Dr. Thomas. You're on a roll.
No, I'm done with questions. I think when we're done questions here, I think maybe Mr. O'Keefe ought to be able to kind of answer those same questions.
Yes.
I think they're really key to me.
And let me ask if there are, is there anyone in the audience that have questions for Ms. Cheever? Please state your name.
Dr. Fred Vernacchia. Just one, I'm not sure it's a question, but more of a clarification. You stated that you recruited 28 physicians. I think that means you recruited 28 physicians to the IPA. You didn't recruit 28 physicians to the county.
No, IPA.
But I think that's really important because we haven't seen 28 physicians enter our county in 20 years. Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. Mr. O'Keefe.
Just a couple of things, and yeah, that was an important clarification. I think rather than quibble over the genesis of managed care, which I would take exception to a couple of the things you said, I would definitely want to clarify that a decision casually to enter into a full risk arena is not something that one makes. It requires licensure, and it requires several hundred million dollars in reserves. It's not, I don't think, something that you would decide you were going to do next week and simply do it. I would also ask that, and I think perhaps it's important to share, my philosophy is that however good medicine is practiced and however, and I know you share that because I know the fine work that you folks do, but however good medicine is practiced and however we get doctors and providers to treat, we all agree that's a good thing. I would say, though, that if you're looking at kind of what's your specialty and what's your niche, I would ask, you do indeed have a risk pool relationship with the health plans, correct?
In most of them, not anymore.
You don't have any risk pools for performance?
Pay for performance, not hospital risk pool, no.
But you have nothing that you do with any of the health plans are tied to utilization thresholds, including specialty referrals and or bed days for the commercial population?
Most of that is based on pay for performance. The groups do get bonus money from the health plans, as all IPAs, right. All organizations, just
right.
On P4P.
Right.
As far as risk sharing and I didn't mean to slight you for taking risk. It's just something that most IPAs don't have the expertise to do.
I would completely concur with that statement.
In the hospital risk business.
Right.
So as far as risk arrangements, again, that's something the IPAs have pulled away from, feeling that they would rather be paid their revenue up front to take care of their members, rather than take the risk and be out of business because the revenue wasn't there or utilization went up. So.
But unfortunately, being out of business could also result from the health plan renegotiating contracts on an annual basis and deciding that the performance of a particular IPA now required them to have a reduction in revenue. That can happen and has happened, yeah.
I think the one thing that we try to focus on is that if we're here giving good patient care, good health care, quality care to our patients, no matter what transpires in the insurance world, we'll be here to service patients.
And I'd like to thank you both very much for being here. We really appreciate that you took the time to come. And Commissioner O'Dell, you seem to have one more question you wanted to ask, and then we'll kind of move to the next agenda item.
We've dealt on outpatient care, and you alluded to what happens for hospitalization. And I believe you said you have a contract with Tenet, is that right?
We actually are in the final stages of negotiating with Tenet, and I see one of our colleagues here in the room. So we just received our template and proposal last week. We expect to have a contract in place within 30 days. I would say we would probably have a 90-day window on the CHW hospitals.
So you're the full risk. I mean, you cover the hospitalization, too.
Yes, sir.
Under your per capita.
Yes, under the capitation agreement. And maybe just to elaborate a little bit on what you said before, too, I would say it's not so much the health plans necessarily reducing costs that makes that an attractive relationship, as I know you know. It's the ability for the health plans to fix their costs that they find to be attractive.
Now, when you say Tenet, are you referring both to Sierra Vista and Twin Cities?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And same question. What happens for inpatient care in your plan?
Basically, Slow Select does not contract with the hospitals for hospital care. We rely on the health plans to do that, and we rely on the health plans to tell us which facilities they've contracted with so that we can use them.
I do think, though, that there is an integral component of care that has to do with the institutional piece. And I think our programs are evidence of that. I think a employed group of hospitalist physicians and intensivists contributes to the quality of the care that the patient receives, and I'm very passionate about that. I think RN case management is something that contributes to the quality of the care when the patient actually gets in the hospital. We all know that primary care physicians are, for the most part, overburdened and overtaxed. To expect that quality of care to be consistent with the type of quality of care we provide, for a physician to round on patients after hours, at their lunch break, I am going to say with great conviction, you cannot deliver that component of care that we do by not having that in place.
I think we agree. We also have a hospitalist program.
Yeah, okay, good. And they are two different programs, and we appreciate your giving us the information on the different programs.
We thank you. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, now, we will move on to the next item on our agenda, which is Dr. Thomas with his Public Health Department report.
Thank you. I don't have a written report today. I was gone most of last week, and today was pretty hectic. So I wanted to talk, number one, about ongoing dental access. With another one small piece of good news that USC University of Southern California is going to be up at Clinica Tolosa setting up Wednesday, Thursday, and starting to see patients Friday, assessing them Friday and Saturday, and then doing children evaluations and then full set of treatment within a week. They have 14 chairs in their mobile units that they're bringing up to Bauer Spec School in Paso Robles, and then during the assessment phase and prevention dental sealants, etc., they actually have another 16 chairs that they put in the school. So pretty remarkable. 14 and 16 when I added them up. Gee, that's 40 chairs that they're going to have for 2 days doing assessment prevention visits. And I had discussions with USC staff today, and we're also starting to talk with about possibly ways that they could have dental students come up and do rotations up here, which is exciting. And we continue to have overall difficulty getting all of the children who need dental care in for the care, particularly when they have extensive caries that need some of them full mouth restoration. I was at a contraceptive technology seminar last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, one of the exciting things in family planning, there's a lot of coverage right now about things like the human papillomavirus HPV vaccine, the family planning science and leaders in the field have really de-linked coming in, getting a pap smear and getting a whole pelvic exam from getting birth control, which means the recommendations on a national basis are that a young woman, teenager, or young adult who might be initiating sexual intercourse, that they could wait up to 3 years for their first pap smear. And if you don't have to have a pap smear for 3 years, why do you have to have a pelvic exam unless you're having some problems? So I think a lot of people have kind of been scared off as young women going, gosh, do I want to go into family planning and get a whole, you know, everybody talks about what you got to get. But we can do our chlamydia screening and gonorrhea screening with the urine test these days. So, you know, we're going to work on our protocols, and Planned Parenthood is very involved in a lot of the protocols as well. So I thought it was just kind of a fascinating area that the field is going in, and hopefully improve the accessibility of family planning. I don't know whether Chairwoman Enns, you're going to talk about the Obesity Prevention Task Force. I'll let you talk about that a little bit. The medical marijuana ID card program, the state decided that their real costs weren't $13, but really $142 per card. And so as of March 1st, they let us know that they were going to tack on $142 instead of $13. Because when they counted all their startup costs and how much it was really costing and the fact that Los Angeles had not come online and therefore they didn't get the volume discount here, they were going to add that much, and therefore it would cost $207 to get a card because our component has been $68. There was so much uproar that on March 1st, they said, wait a minute, we've changed our mind. The state portion will only be $66. So now the current cost is good. The $13 to the state is still good through April 1st, and then it will go to $66 for the state and $68 for the county. Half price if you have Medi-Cal. So this month, there's a special. Get them while they're hot, or get them before they go up in price.
I have a question. Do you have to get a card every month, or is a card good for
a year? No,
card
is good for 1 year.
Oh, okay.
And you don't actually have to have a card. A physician's letter, it carries equal weight to a card. Now, on a lot of people who decide they want a card like the fact that it's actually an ID card with a picture on it, that there's a statewide registry that law enforcement can dial into to make sure, yes, the person is on the list. And so if somebody happens to be stopped, there have been some situations where the validity of that doctor's letter was in question, and this removes that question. Eric Greening raised the question of COXI. We did send a notice out to physicians in late December, first week of January, that the number of cases were up. I think I reported on that in January. My memory says 117 cases last year in the county. And we are working on mapping those on a GIS, Geographic Information System map, so that we can get a better, good view of where those individuals live, see if there are any specific clusters. Most of the cases are in the North County. We do know that. I think I'll stop at that point because there's going to be some discussion on budget, and that's another area we did turn in our budget February 9th. And then the last issue, there will be a discussion on at the Board of Supervisors meeting March 20th on whether to bring EMSA, Emergency Medical Systems Agency, bring those services and provide it within public health or continue to contract with EMSA, Inc., which is a nonprofit which has a board of directors. There is an interim executive director, and this is a time at which it's being evaluated. So with that, I'm open to any questions.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Do you have a ETA for the GIS mapping of the Valley Fever?
We should have it before next month.
Before April 1st?
Before April 1st. Before the next Health Commission meeting. Is there something on April 9th?
No,
Something on April 1st?
No, you said before next month in April 1st.
Before next month's Health Commission meeting.
Oh, okay. Could we have a presentation? Or
sure.
At least maybe a diagram of where those cases are?
Yes.
I know there's been some questions that I've heard about, you know, soil disruptions in areas where these people are coming down with
yep.
Valley Fever, and that if we can pinpoint that, maybe we can notify APCD to do something, I guess.
We'll bring information next month.
I think that Mr. Greening was also asking for some general education about how one gets Valley Fever.
Right.
And if you can do that in 2 or 3 minutes, that along with the GIS mapping?
Sure.
Maybe you could do it in a little longer than 2 or 3 minutes.
I'll shoot for 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, you get it from breathing the spores
yeah.
in.
Yeah, exactly.
And the spores are carried in the dust.
Okay, and is it only dust?
That was 15 seconds.
Well, that was good.
Not just the dust.
So do you think there's anything else that Mr. Greening was looking for besides that sort of general
Yeah, I'll bring some more information.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Can I interrupt
yes.
with a real quick question on that?
Yes.
I lived in the San Joaquin Valley where, as you know, it's very prevalent. They used to do PPD on one hand and a skin test on the other for the COXI. Do they do that in this area at all?
No, that COXI skin test is no longer on the market and not felt to provide good data for some reason.
Thank you.
It has fallen out of favor and is no longer available.
I guess I'm an old lady.
Something I wanted to ask you about the last thing you said in your report, which was?
EMSA?
Yeah. The EMSA presentation to the board, is there something the Health Commission can do to assist in that, or is there anything you want us to do or consider?
I think it's kind of an internal issue at this point. The board will look at pros, cons, and make their decision.
Okay. And you'll just let us know what the outcome is. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Dr. Thomas from commissioners? Okay. I'm sorry. Commissioner Massey.
Quick question about the dental people coming up. Is that going to be a one-time thing, or are they establishing a relationship to come up with Clinico Tolosa?
That's one of the things we were talking about today. We'd certainly like to make it an annual visit to the county. Mr. Mibb is paying for it, and they kept saying that they wondered who Mr. Mibb was why he was so hard to get into contact with, but it's the managed risk medical insurance board that oversees healthy families. That's what Mr. MIP stands for. Catchy phrase.
All right, we'll move on to our updates then. Since we didn't have a meeting in February, there's a lot to update, and there were a lot of committee meetings. But for my update, in January, since our last meeting, I did attend a day-long seminar in Santa Barbara on obesity, which started out with the startling statement that maternal diet during pregnancy and breastfeeding appears to influence the obesity in later life. the topic of this seminar was primarily addressing the physiologic aspects of obesity, but the battle involves not only the health care providers, but policymakers and all of us as citizens, and that leads right into what our Childhood Obesity Task Force is attempting to do, to bring all of those elements in our community together. And the child, so I will move on to that. They had four meetings since our last meeting. They have effectively completed their planning meeting and have determined the priorities for the plan and recommendations. Next month, we will hear a full report from them, and the full written report is expected to be available before the end or by the end of this month. So we're all looking forward to that. There were a lot of very talented and busy people who participated in this task force and have done a wonderful job. And I have to also say that Joel Dieringer and Amy Gilman have really done an excellent job in facilitating this task force. In addition to the task force members meetings, each of which was, we had very interesting presentations on a variety of subjects. The Health Commission, or I'm sorry, the task force members, a lot of them did attend a forum on promoting public health through community development, at which Dr. Jackson, who among other things was at one time our state public health officer, gave a very interesting talk about designing healthy communities, followed by a panel discussion featuring Dr. Thomas and also community development officials from Paso Robles and our county, and Lisa Quinn from Regional Rideshare, and our supervisor, Jim Patterson. I wanted to have Bob put this up on the screen. You can see this meeting by going to the website. And is it up on the screen? I guess it is. So I want to give you enough time to copy that down, anybody that wants to view the entire meeting. And I think that anybody that has the time would find this very interesting. Okay, what else? Well, there's the Tobacco Control Coalition has had several meetings. They are now in the process of planning their objectives for the coming 2007 through 10 work plan. And they have basically four areas that they're going to address, and we will look for those at maybe, I'm not sure if it's the next meeting, but very soon to see the official work plan that will be submitted to the state. I also attended the SART Advisory Board, and that was a very information-packed meeting, and a number of items on the agenda were the child abuse information system, a way to be able to have kids not be in the courtroom, and also that SART, and I think this is important, SART provides a gateway to other services that kids who have been victims can access besides just gathering the forensics. From that, they can go forward and get the help that they will need. They're working on a pool of volunteers to do translation. The volunteers obviously have to be very well-screened prior to being used. And SART will be moving in July or August. Their physical location will be in the old emergency room of General Hospital. And I think they're very excited about that. I think that's enough for my report. Every committee has met except for nominating. And so everybody has a report, and we'll move on to commissioner updates and then to our committee reports. So I think we'll start on my left and start with Commissioner Tilscher. Just your, not your committee, just gotcha. Your report.
Just a real brief report on San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention Council, SLOCAP. Their executive committee met in January as well as February. The board had a meeting today I was unable to attend. couple items of interest with SLOCAP is, they sent a representative to Los Angeles for a two-day intensive training in child abduction, and they're planning on integrating that into some of their programs, including their Talk About Touching program. And with regards to Talk About Touching, which is a program that goes out to the kindergarten classes throughout the county and talks about the appropriateness of touching in the family and strangers or whoever it is, they were able to put together a Spanish translation video that will enable the educator coordinator to show the parents, the non-English speaking parents, this video prior to their children going through this educational program, so they know what's going on and they can have dialogue at home about it as well. Questions come up from the program, and without parent involvement, there's been some breakdown in the communication between the children and the parents. I know it's an excellent video because I was the videographer, so that's it for SLOCAP.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Well, I was Commissioner O'Dell's alternate on the Public Health CBO Grant Committee, and my job was to do site visits, so I got to do two site visits in North County, one at the Women's Shelter and one at North County Connection, then report back to the grant reviewers my impressions, and I guess they look favorably on them. So that was that.
Are those meetings finished now, or are they, is that ongoing still? Commissioner O'Dell maybe wants to report on that. Okay.
Okay, on that side, I had two things to report. One, that was one of them that we have finished now. It took four Thursday mornings from 9 to 12 in a row to do it. And now the report will go to the Board of Supervisors. And now, any group that did not get funded or didn't feel they got funded appropriately has an opportunity to meet with this group and discuss it with them before the Board of Supervisors meeting where the allocation is actually made. But it went rather smoothly this year, and it's a very interesting group to be on because you see all the wonderful programs in San Luis Obispo County that we have. And it's only too bad we can't fund all of them, because every one of them is a fine program. And it's just a matter of sorting out which is better than another one. And it's very difficult to do, but it is the most interesting. And what impresses me again is the great number of volunteer programs we have in San Luis Obispo County for preventative health and programs, women's shelters, the whole thing. Really kind of fun to serve on from that standpoint. So anyway, the other one is on the mental health board that I'm on. That we have received another $900,000 from the state for the Mental Health Services Act, and in the process of figuring out how we're going to allocate that for programs. And it'll be in the same mode. It has to be new programs. And it'll be addition to the Mental Health Services Act programs we already have, and some new ones, too, will come out of that, I'm sure. But it is separate funds entirely from the state. They're 100% funds, and the county, of course, treats it as a separate entity as well. And the program is vastly different. It's a much more concentrated program. Individuals' caseloads are like 10 or 20 at the most. For workers, so it's a very concentrated on the high risk type of individual is what it is, and the mental health board is also the mental health director Karen Baylor is bringing together alcohol and drug and mental health, which got divided many years ago when funding was separate. And it got split entirely. Now we have co-occurring disorders, co-occurring diagnoses, and they're not really separate. And she's bringing it back together. And the mental health board and the alcohol and drug board are also starting to talk together and work together. So this is good news from the standpoint of, because previously he either got divided into one or the other, and or he got bounced back and forth from one to the other, or he didn't get treated at all. So but very positive news.
Thank you for your report. Commissioner Shimizu's?
I will be attending the Adult Services Policy Commission on Friday. I have not been able to attend those for the past couple months, but I will report at the next meeting.
Thank you. Commissioner Hicks?
I think I'm embarrassed to say I'm the only one without any report. But I do want to thank everyone for the lovely flowers that were sent to me in the hospital. Thank you.
Commissioner Horn, you're welcome.
She shouldn't be embarrassed because I don't have any reports either. I'm sorry. I was out of the community during a lot of January and part of February. So,
Commissioner Grena?
No report.
Commissioner Massey?
No report.
Commissioner Warren? Yes. Who has probably the only microphone that doesn't work, right? Okay.
Yes, I do have a report, and though thanks to Dave, he did give most of it. I appreciate that. He did it very succinctly. So it's really exciting to have those two boards working together to better serve our folks in San Luis Obispo County, and particularly around the co-occurring disorders. And then I just wanted to let people know, hopefully they're reading their Telegram Tribune and seeing the series of articles on methamphetamine, which is a huge issue, not just in our county, but it is a big one in our county. It's all over the state, but so that's, they're really giving a good, clear indication of what's happening with that. And the other thing I wanted to bring up is that HBO this coming weekend is going to air a groundbreaking 14-part series on addiction. And there will be a free weekend. It starts Thursday, March 15th. And there will be DVDs available after the series runs that you'll be able to get in your local store. But it's really going to be talking about the latest in research and treatment, and the long-term solutions and the fact that people do need long-term recovery services. So there is a website, addictionaction.org, that people can access to get more information on this. And I just hope everybody will tune in and catch this new groundbreaking program right on your own television. And that's it.
If you would repeat when that's beginning and the web address so that anybody at home can write that down.
It premieres Thursday, March 15th, this coming week, and it'll be on HBO, and it'll be the 15th through March 18th on Sunday. And the website is addictionaction.org.
Do you know what time on HBO?
Yes, 9 to 10:30 p.m.
9 to 10:30 on the 15th, HBO. Watch it.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner Warren. Where is it? No, I need email. Ah. Okay. Commissioner Donnelly was unable to be here tonight, but she wanted us to know about the, she attends the bioterrorism committee meetings, and she wanted us to announce the date of a food safety training, and thought that commissioners might be well served to attend, and I think we each have a copy of that that was given to us. The workshop is on Wednesday, March 28th, at the Department of Agricultural building. Is that the one that's just down from the Health Department? Is that where that is? Okay, where we've had meetings in the past. In that conference room, right? Where we've had our retreats in the past, yes. Space is limited, so early reservations are recommended. And I guess that's it. Thank you very much. And thank you for reminding me, Jean. Okay, we'll move on then to our committee reports. The first one will be the executive committee, which met. Let me just gather my notes here for that, since I'm going to give it. All right, the executive committee met, and as the bylaws committee. And we have reviewed the bylaws in that we felt that there were some that just needed to be updated. And I just want to say that the mission statement has not been updated, but it was the feeling of the members of this committee that it could be. But we wanted to involve all the commissioners in doing that, not just the executive committee. So what I would like to ask you to do is in the next month or so to, and I think I sent you an email to this effect, to think about what our mission statement is and if you have some vision as to what changes we might want to make in that mission statement. So now it is necessary for us to vote on the bylaws changes. And you have all received copies of the proposed changes, which I will now read. So let me direct your attention first to page 3. And we are looking at Article 2, which is Objectives and Powers, number 5, which currently reads, provide and encourage coordination, cooperation, and exchange of information by sponsoring an annual forum on health issues for representatives of all health-related organizations. We would like to delete the following words from that, and that is, let's see, and we were going to insert, hold on a moment. Okay, so it should now read, we would be deleting the words coordination, cooperation, and exchange of information by sponsoring an annual forum on health issues for representatives of all health-related organizations. And we would insert instead community outreach to assess public opinion about local healthcare challenges and issues. Now, the rationale for that is that we have this commission does not have the staffing to do a countywide health forum, but what we do want to do is to reach out to the community and find out what their concerns are. So that is the first change. Dr. Thomas, do we need to vote each change, or can we vote them all? And I guess I'll ask if there's any questions from the commissioners. Okay. Number 5 will now read, provide and encourage community outreach to assess public opinion about local health care challenges and issues. Dr. Thomas, do we have to vote on each one?
No, I think if there's no call for a separate vote, you could do it all.
Okay. Together. All right. All right. So I will trust that if anybody wants to vote on any one of these separately, you'll let me know that, and we'll mush on here. So the next change will be on page 7, Article 3, Section 11. On the last paragraph, we want to delete the following. It is recommended that at least one meeting per year shall be held in each of the following areas, coast, north, south. What we would like to insert is meetings may be held in varying locations as deemed appropriate. Okay, next change. Article 4, Section 3, Number 3. That's right after what we were just looking at. Article 4, Section 3 is at the bottom of the page, and then you turn to page 8, actually, where you find number 3. The secretary shall, and we simply wanted to delete number D, which says, serve as a member of the Community Education Committee. Thus, what happens is that number E becomes number D. Okay. And then the last change would be on page 10. Article 5, Standing Committees, Section 2. Add the following. There is an A and B. Number 5, I'm sorry, there's a number 5, and then there's a section A and B. We would like to add a section or a letter C following that, which says, provide programs and materials for public information and education on timely and pertinent health issues affecting the community. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dr. Thomas, you have a comment?
Only that I think given the way your current bylaws are written, the proposed changes need to be provided specifically on a notice 10 days in advance of the meeting. So I think we'll need to they've been read into the record today.
Okay.
You guys can discuss them if you'd like to. And then a notice going with the agenda will be posted.
You know, actually, I knew that, and I thought we had that notice. I mean, I thought that I provided that. I sent out my email within 10 days.
Right. But it says the bylaws may be amended or revised by a 2/3 vote of the commission present, provided notice of the amendment or revision is given in writing at least 10 days prior to the meeting. And I would read it may be staff's fault in terms of, I do have an email from March 1st, so that does meet the intent, but it didn't, looking at what the agenda says, it's not specific.
Oh, okay. Well, this is not an urgent matter,
yeah,
so I
think
we've spent a long time, you know, coming to these changes. So let me just simply say that we'll vote on them next meeting.
We'd be safer in doing that.
And then you can provide us, Jean, with the lined out and inserted. That does make it a little easier to see. But the overall intention was that this commission is moving forward to being a body that educates. Our education committee prior, it said basically that we educated the public about who we were. But what we really want to do is educate the community about health issues. And so we reframed some of that to meet that criteria. Are there any questions from commissioners or any discussion about these? Commissioner Hetherington.
Sorry, did I get in front of you? I guess, thank you, you made that seamless. But I just wanted to maybe kind of pique everybody's interest when we're looking at the mission statement, that it's very old, and it's very public-private partnership, which is still, I guess, a good buzzword, but I think that we need to encompass a healthy environment in our mission statement. I think, you know, if we could maybe wordsmith it so that we're working with partnerships, but we're looking at a more holistic partnership with our planning departments and our park and rec people to fight the obesity, to give kids something to do so they don't slide into addiction. I mean, I think it's broad, it could be broader, but it could be more encompassing, if that makes any sense. But that's, I guess, what I would like to see us talk about next time is is coming back with maybe a sentence each, or you know, that something that you would like to see included.
So on our next agenda, we'll provide some time to have that discussion. We won't be changing it on the next agenda. We will only vote on the bylaws changes.
The mission statement is not officially part of the bylaws, I don't believe. It's an attachment to the bylaws.
Meaning? That we can change it at any time we want?
I think you can, yeah. Although I think the Board of Supervisors, as it notes in the bylaws, the Board of Supervisors does need to approve the amendments. So they have to concur that if the proposed mission is changing, that they need to be on board as well.
Sure. Okay. So we aren't going to change anything at the next meeting, but we will discuss it, and it would be nice if you could bring forward your ideas about that. Commissioner O'Dell?
Yeah. When you said that they need to have changes to it, specifically what Pram is saying, I certainly would support, and from that standpoint, because it's not included. But from what other standpoint did it need changes, the mission statement?
Let me read the mission statement.
I have. Yeah, let's read it.
Oh, well, if you read it, it just is sort of, I think like Pam said, old-fashioned jargon. And you read it and you go, so what do they really mean? You know, how does this really relate to us? And so I think that's what we're looking for is to...
Well, what I'd be concerned about that in redoing this, that it would still be broad because there is no other commission that deals with, now that there's no county hospital, no other commission that deals with actually primary health care. And I would hope that it would not be narrowed only to public health, as the bylaws are, because our mission, I think, is broader than that, because there's no other commission to do that, to look at the overall picture of health in this community. That's my concern.
Yeah, and I think that's what we were talking about. That's what we were talking about at the executive committee meeting. We just felt that we wanted to get some comment from all commissioners, not just those of us who were there. Commissioner Horn.
Yeah, as I look at the mission statement, my understanding of mission of mission statements, excuse me, is that they are extremely broad. They do not delineate things, and I would suggest that the very first sentence is sufficient mission statement, that it tells you everything that we want to do. What you do in addition to that is dependent upon what's a problem at this time versus the next time or some other time. So that's my input this week.
Thank you. All right. I think that we can now move along from this, with your permission, and go to the Legislative Committee report.
We met, when was our last, March 2nd, yeah, last Monday actually we met, and in your packets, commissioners, you have a list of the active bills that we are looking at and what the position is as of this meeting. There are bills that we're watching. I would like you to look at those, and we would welcome input from any of the commissioners that are not on the committee in terms of bills that you have some interest in looking at, following. We will, as the time approaches, in terms of the Senate and House taking action on these bills, make more specific recommendations and forward them on to the Board of Supervisors and hopefully get some more formal feedback into our legislative representatives in terms of the stance of the Commission on these pending bills and legislation.
Thank you for your report, Commissioner O'Dell.
Maybe I'm overlooking, but I don't see any on health care. Any bills reviewed?
We have a couple.
Health care.
The one the governor is proposing.
Oh, no. That's a whole.
Other ones that are going to be stringing up, they're going to be popping up all over.
We'll
see new ones. But I don't see any on this list.
What we asked was for our support for Marcia to do comparative analysis and kind of compare the different pending bills on that and kind of narrow it down because, as you mentioned, there are several that are kind of flying at us from all directions.
But from all reports that I've had, that something probably is going to happen this year.
Hopefully.
I think we ought to stay on top of it.
Emailed Marcia, I think you, on the one that is at the state level that has to do with studying genetically engineered crops, and for some reason it didn't make the list, but it's coming our way as a solution at the state level about test plots and what they can do and what they can't do with genetically engineered crops.
Yes, I did get that email, Pam, and I do want to include it in our next report. Yeah, thanks.
Maybe I'm the only one that got this email. It was a link actually to support Bill SB 120, the bill on the nutritional information. I think I got it through the Obesity Prevention Task Force. And I immediately linked onto it and sent a personal. But we've also. That's to be heard in the Senate Health Committee, apparently on the 14th. And so the email that I got, as I recall, you know, really wanted to make sure that we let our representatives know how we felt about that. And if you all don't have that, I'll see if I can forward it to you. I might have sent it to you. I think maybe I sent it to you guys. Yeah, I'm thinking that I sent it to you all, but my memory is failed. You received it?
Yes.
Okay, I sent it to you.
I just read it before I
came. Okay. All right, then. Are you finished with your report, Commissioner Shimousis? Okay. So who do we have next? Next is community education. Community education. Commissioner Hetherington.
Well, we had a short meeting after the legislative committee meeting. Our biggest worker, B, Ed, wasn't there. So, but I'm happy to tell you that the flyer is all but done and printed and paid for. So it looks like we're going to be getting about 2,500 copies. I think what we'll ask the commissioners to do at the next meeting is grab a stack and visit your local pharmacies and leave a couple. Introduce yourself as a health commissioner to the pharmacist. Can we leave them here for you? I don't think we'll be as ambitious as to get them out to doctor's offices, but I think what I'll do is make a couple phone calls and see if maybe we can't get them out in the waste management bills as they come out. I don't know if we can afford to print that many, but maybe they'll pick up part of the cost. Or maybe Dr. Thomas will pick up the cost. He's reaching for his microphone.
What I was going to suggest was that if you could provide I'm trying to think how many we send out, 350 in the public health bulletin. If you wanted us to put one in each of the public health bulletins, that goes out to all physicians as well as some government folks and press media folks. So how soon will they be printed? Because
I think we're going to shoot for April, right? The next health commission meeting.
Oh, okay. Articles are due March 14th, so it would probably be out by April 1st, something like that. I mean, because it takes a while to go out to print, et cetera. So there might be a convergence there. Okay.
I think it's Spanish.
And Marsha Bollinger, who's, was it? I guess in conjunction with the legislative committee, had come across a San Jose ordinance, I think, that was a collection template for drugs where they would, the public could go and drop them off at the police stations and sheriff's departments and CHP offices, who would then take them to be destroyed at the, I can't remember, at the hospitals. So, you know, we've asked Marsha to look into it a little bit further, so that might be something that we want to bring forward to the commission to maybe start a program in San Luis Obispo County that is modeled after San Jose's program. So this is a first step. We'll build upon that, and then we hope that we get them out of the water stream and the waste stream. Ed gets all the credit for the flyer. I'm just the money gal.
Yeah, Pam managed to twist an arm or two and get the money for the printing, which is very important. And the message is, don't flush them down the toilet. And we really appreciate the work that you all have done for that. Thank you. The Budget Committee, Commissioner Tilscher.
All right. I will try and make this as brief as I can. The Budget Committee met on Friday, February 2nd, and we discussed the health agency wish list that Dr. Thomas had put together and how the commission could support the agency and Dr. Thomas and his efforts. I had a follow-up meeting with him on Tuesday, March 6th, and we talked in more detail about this wish list of the health agencies and went through it. He helped me understand what they're facing. The wish list isn't included in our packet tonight. I'm sure you can get a copy of it if you want to look at it. But basically, it consists of about 15 items. And if you look at the list, which you don't have, it appears the first 12 are on the list are pretty reasonable and don't have a significant impact on the net county costs. They're either no or very low cost to the county. So obviously nothing is a slam dunk, but given the net county costs and not much of an increase there, they should be pretty reasonable. The main issue that, my understanding, the main issue is that we're looking at a budget that is $4 million over budget, and that carries forward from last year. The the increase in costs are due mainly to realignment and a cost of living increase of 5%. What Dr. Thomas and Jeff Hamm have been asked to do is look at that budget and come up with a list of areas they could get their budget back down, basically carving away that $4 million increase in the budget. And that list has been put together, and I guess it's been presented or will be presented, Dr. Thomas? Yes. Okay. At this point, I don't know that there's any action he wants the Health Commission to take. I do think that after talking to him, we need to support him in his wish list and help him in every way we can to achieve his objectives. There's going to be increase in costs to the agency. There's a lot of programs, a lot of work being done on prevention. Those programs include family planning, TB testing, the restaurant inspections, and increasing the frequency of those. And, you know, in the long run, that'll keep the community healthier, but they do drive the costs of running the agency up. If Dr. Thomas has any additions to that.
I think the only, the main item is actually, for me, on the bottom of the list, because it is a higher cost item and it's not meeting an immediate need. It's funding a health education specialist to work on obesity prevention from a community-wide basis, to work on working with other community groups to try and get the obesity task force recommendations implemented, that it is a net county cost of $51,000 for that. In terms of things that are on our budget augmentation list, that's a near and dear to my heart.
Dr. Thomas, hasn't that been on been a request in the past also for this full-time position for this person, or is this a new thing this year?
We're requesting this for the first time this year. We did put in a grant request to California Endowment and have some time to we got a small grant to increase public health infrastructure to combat obesity and chronic disease. But this is the first time we've requested this specific position.
Because I have a big star next to it on my list from your wish list. I think that's something we want to support. You certainly are going to have the support of the Obesity Prevention Task Force. Do you want to be any more specific about your wish list? Or Commissioner Tilshner said that there isn't anything for us to do at this time.
Right now we're we've turned in our budgets February 9th. We are answering questions of the County Administrative Office, who are our analyst is analyzing our budget. That's his job, asking lots of questions. And then they're also looking at how countywide funding is coming in. And so they're at a point of making, down the road, they will be making recommendations to the County Administrative Officer, David Edge, and then coming back to us with, well, this is what we recommend. Then there will be some more negotiation, and then it will go to the Board of Supervisors in June. So if there are some specific areas that the Health Commission wants to push for, then I think it is helpful to write a letter to the board and to county admin and myself, saying these are the things that we think are particularly important.
Now or later?
Now. Yeah, we didn't get it into your packets. We can give it to you. Now April's fine.
Okay. We could get an email of this wish list. Would that be possible? Anybody who individually would like to send a letter would be welcome to do so, and then we could talk about it as a board, as a commission, at our next meeting if we want to collectively send a letter from this officially from this commission. How does that sound? Okay. Commissioner O'Dell.
A point that if there is there is going to be a cut list, of course, that you're putting together, right?
I'd say we're not really at the level of a cut list. We've been asked to say, you know, what would it take to get to there? Nobody suggested that we're having to make all these actual cuts. So I'm not really calling it a cut list because we haven't been instructed, go make these.
But at the point, if it ever reaches a cut list, then I think our commission may even have to have an emergency meeting because there are things I'm sure we would want to push and act very visibly on if there is such a thing, which I hope there isn't.
I think we would agree with that. But we'll try to act proactively rather than reactively at this point. Okay. Is that the conclusion of your report, Commissioner Tilshner? All right. Then the last is nominating committee, Commissioner Hicks.
Jean's going to be sending a letter to each one of you asking you if you plan to stay on as a commissioner this next year. Nobody's terms are up, but oftentimes people make personal choices or professional choices on what they want to do. So you will be getting a letter from her. We will be holding a meeting probably shortly thereafter with the nominating group to see what our actual applicants that we have on file now. Jean said she did receive one in the mail, I believe, this last week. And we do have several alternates. So we will do recruitment, but we will not at this moment unless someone chooses to not renew or elect to stay on the Health Commission be seating anyone. But we will go through the process.
Let me understand that if we now have alternates.
We do have alternates, and we are going to review the alternates to make sure we have a sufficient amount in each category.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Commissioner Hicks? Prospective future items. We know that next month we're going to have an excellent presentation on the Obesity Task Force Prevention, the Childhood Obesity Prevention Task Force. And what else were we, we're going, and, oh, yeah, about the COXI, the Valley Fever, short discussion on that, and a presentation by Dr. Thomas. We will vote on the bylaws. I think we'll have a pretty full meeting next month. And Commissioner Hetherington, didn't we talk about at the last, was it the legislative committee meeting, about one other subject we thought would be terrific? I made a note, but I don't think I have it with me. Oh, well, there's the trans fat thing. We've talked about that in the past, and we will be talking about, yeah, maybe that was what it was. And there are some pieces of legislation that involve trans fat. So, yeah, we will probably be looking at what has been done in other communities. And, you know, what are trans fats and what are artificial trans fats, which we now know what they are. So are there any other comments about prospective programs that you would like to bring forward, Commissioner Hetherington?
As always, water quality, water quality, water quality. I think that was one of the ones that we talked about, but that would be fine for May or June, especially when people are going to start using the beaches more, that maybe Kurt Batson can come and Regional Water Quality Control Board, and maybe
we did have water quality. Was it we invited them for last month and they couldn't come or something, which was the last?
I think they said they'd be ready in June. They'd have something to report. I'll touch base with them again, but I know it was a few months before they were going to have something. I talked to them last month.
Okay. And Mr. Greening, you have a comment?
Thank you, and I appreciate your taking on the Valley Fever. And one thing to think about is that May is Bike Month, and they're planning to do it big this time. And it might be that your audience would benefit from some type of proclamation or participation in the county proclamations that are going on, and Health Commission participation in some of the Bike Month events. And if you want to invite someone here for a show and tell about Bike Month at the May meeting, I think it would be very timely. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll work on that. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. All right, now, I think that we're at the end of this meeting. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Good meeting.
That is not-